Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is going on? It is the Ethos Clippers podcast, and it is playoff time. The Clippers and the Suns getting ready to square off in round number one on Sunday. We don't know if it's afternoon. We don't know if it's evening. We'll find that out at a later date. But we do know that it is time to break this series down from A to Z, from KD all the way down to Bones Highland. And who better to have back on the Ethos Clippers podcast than my buddy at Young NBA on Twitter. You know him by the name of Shane Young. You also know him by the basketball god, according to Devin Booker. Devin says, you know hoops to Shane Young. So if he knows hoops, he damn well is good enough to be the guy on this podcast that breaks down this Suns-Clippers series. You see him tweeting about the Suns all the time. He'll go and retweet you if you try and bash him, if you go after his ballot, if you go after Nikola Jokic or Embiid, if you go after the Suns, he will make sure to retweet you and make your life a living hell. He's Shane Young, back on the Ethos Clippers podcast. Shane, how are you, my friend?
My goodness, that was epic. Just epic, Brandon. I will say I'm doing fine. But counterpoint to the Devin Booker thing, what if he doesn't know ball, therefore he's saying I know ball, which neither of us know ball?
I think it's safe to say he knows ball. He's a good enough basketball player. I think just the eye test kind of confirms that one, that he's decent at basketball. I mean, if he's not good at basketball, that'd be great. That would help the Clippers a lot.
Great for the Clippers.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Hopefully.
My week has been, or my first 2 days of this week have been crazy. Like, I'm just tired of getting called a moron, idiot, don't know basketball, don't watch the game, watch the Nuggets. Do you know how valuable Giannis is? Just because I picked Embiid, which I've shifted my pick in MVP, all year it was Jokic. But, like, man, when I put that article out, like, zero people decided to actually read it instead of, you know, before it started coming at me about why I picked the wrong guy.
I mean, let's be honest, Shane. If you post a picture, that's all people are going to look at, and you posted the ballot, and they're not going to read the article. But I want to say something that I find very funny. You have to be one of the nicest human beings in the world. But if someone goes after you on Twitter and posts an opinion that you disagree with, you can be the meanest human being in the world. When you are on one side, and on this one, you have been on the Jokic side for the entire season. If someone came at you that was a 76ers fan and called you an idiot for thinking that Embiid could be the MVP, you went after them. But you have flip-flopped, my friend.
You got to the crux of the issue, though, because they called you an idiot. I think if you respond to my mentions in a normal human being manner, like you have some common sense, instead of talking to someone like you would over the internet, instead of just in the streets or something, like, yeah, then we can talk.
Oh, man, it's funny. I just think it's funny because it's not the nice comments that you'll retweet most of the time. You did actually retweet a couple of those today. But if someone comes after you, it is very enjoyable. And the one thing that you do is that when you believe in one thing, you will certainly hammer it home. And you believed in the Suns for a very long time, especially since they got KD. Let's not forget that this is the same Suns team that you believed very heavily in last year before they lost to the Mavs. Oh, yeah. So you have been proven wrong before. So let's get straight into the series, because this is going to be one that people who have listened to this podcast know that I've been very down on this team
for the entire season, even after wins. I mean, they won two games this weekend, and I came on this podcast and I said, I'm disappointed in this team. There's no reason that they should have had to fight against some crap lineups that Portland and Phoenix threw out them over the weekend. And so God knows what they're going to do against a team that has Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Chris Paul, and DeAndre Ayton. And so I have said that I don't know if the Clippers have a chance in this series. Now, that being said, let's start with this. The one thing that may be in the Clippers' favor, and we'll start with some positive stuff, is that I understand people wanted Sacramento because it's the Sacramento Kings. But Sacramento's young, Sacramento's quick. Do you think it helps the Clippers at all that Phoenix is a little bit slower, a little more methodical, not as athletic, they don't have as much juice flying up and down the court? Could that be something perhaps that could help the Clippers out, knowing how bad their transition defense is? Is that something that could perhaps help the Clippers?
I totally get the sentiment of, you know, young legs, fresh legs. The Kings' best lineups include so many, like, incredible athletes compared to what the Clippers have, right? I mean, I know a couple other media members that cover the Clippers were saying, you know, Sacramento should be the goal there. I kind of feel like, or no, they said Sacramento shouldn't be the goal because of that reason. I misspoke, but yeah. I kind of feel like you're in a no-win territory regardless, because going up to Sacramento and playing, like, I feel like, yeah, that is true. The athleticism is going to get the best of you. What I would say about, like, you know, wanting the Suns because they're slower, more methodical, it's more that's the Clippers style, is that I think the Suns make way, way fewer mistakes, and they're more experienced, for one. They got the veteran savvy because of certain guys in the starting lineup and their head coach. I kind of feel as if you can take advantage of Sacramento's youth and experience. And I'm not always someone that's going to be like, hey, this team's going to lose in the first round just because they haven't been there before. Like, Sacramento could beat the Warriors. I haven't picked that series. I have no idea. But I would trust the Clippers maybe forcing more turnovers against the Kings, taking advantage of them not being there and ready for that moment. Kawhi, who's played in, what, maybe 90, 100 playoff games? Maybe I'm overstating that. I don't know. But a lot of playoff games compared to these guys. And I kind of feel like Ty Lue would get the best of that coaching matchup. Against a team like Phoenix with Durant, who is by far the best player out of anyone on Phoenix and Sacramento. You know, if you have a choice, I've always been a believer you take the lesser talented team, man. I think they would have fared better against Sacramento. Although, as you say, and I agree, it would have been tough because of the legs.
Yeah. Here's one thing that I just want to put out there once again. I put out there on the last pod as well that there's been a lot of debate about the Clippers and should they have lost that game on Sunday.
That's nonsense.
It is nonsense, and I agree with you. And I want to reiterate the point that I have been saying all season. Everyone who's been listening to this podcast knows that I've been saying all season the Clippers need to avoid the play-in because of the amount of minutes that you would put on Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And Paul George obviously is hurt now. But the amount of minutes that would go on those guys during a game either today, Wednesday, and then if they, God forbid, lost that game, another one on Friday, it would kill you going into a first-round matchup. So I'm really happy the Clippers at least have a week off where Kawhi Leonard is going to be rested. And so let's get straight into the matchup that everyone's going to be talking about. And that is Kawhi Leonard versus Kevin Durant. Kawhi has been playing out of his mind. He certainly looks like the Kawhi Leonard that we knew and loved before he tore his ACL. Kevin Durant is 8-0 as a member of the Suns when he plays. This is clearly a very good Suns team. We know KD is certainly one of the best players in the NBA. You've posted a ton of videos recently that whatever you do against him, he'll find a way. Whether it's a jumper over you, whether it's going and attacking the hoop, whether it's a three-pointer in transition, whether it's finding
drawing fouls, finding
the open man, he'll do it. I'm curious how you think the Clippers are going to guard KD, and if you even can guard KD. And on the other end, how will the Suns guard Kawhi Leonard? Because I don't think that Kawhi is going to draw the KD assignment out of the gate. I would be a little bit surprised by that because of how much he's going to need to do offensively. It's certainly possible, yeah. But I think I would see Batum on him to start, and then we'll see how things go. How do you see that matchup shaping out?
Yeah, I think if Ty wants to be like different, because I think everyone is expecting what you and I are expecting as Batum, or you know, a wing on him. God forbid Roko gets put in, yeah, put in God the rotation forbid. Here, yeah. But yeah, a wing not named Kawhi on Durant. I think that's what we're expecting. But man, seeing how they dropped the first two games in literally every series they played in the 2021 playoffs, it wouldn't shock me if Kawhi just starts out on him, just to see how it goes. You know, I mean, if it comes down like, you know, Kawhi doesn't have the energy, or he kind of wants to rotate responsibility between him and Batum, then do that. Me personally, like I would put Kawhi on him just because I don't want to mess around. I want to try to steal one of these games, and I just feel like Kawhi has looked awesome defensively. His hands are still ridiculous. I feel like he can really bother KD. I think the thing with Durant is, and maybe you saw the same thing during the Boston series, if he starts a game hot, I think he's going to finish hot. And I think he's going to be incredible throughout the game. I think when he struggles, as we saw in the Minnesota game a couple weeks ago, and there's another game, might have been against Denver. I can't remember what game it was. But like, if he isn't finding a rhythm out of the gate and in the first half, like you can kind of, I wouldn't say get in his head, but like it's noticeably tougher for him throughout the game. When he has these, you know, 15-point quarters in the first half, like that's when you're in trouble. You give someone like that more confidence that he can just do whatever he wants. So I would put Kawhi on, but I'm gonna go with you. I think they'll go in with Batum. I think they'll go with Batum there to guard him at first. But more interestingly for me is, what does Zubats do? Mm-hmm. I'm just enthralled by, do they put him against Aiden, and then obviously you want to match that up, or put him on like Josh Okogie in some lineups and not guard him. You know, we've seen that with, whether it was Russell Westbrook on the Lakers during those matchups, and Zoo would do that, or I guess whatever non-shooters on the floor can kind of help off and roam and clog up the paint. I'm so curious by what we see with that, because I think I tweeted out, like, you know, the most important player in the series is Ayton because of how he's going to combat the different coverages, the different lineups. But, yeah, I mean, that's how I feel about that. And, yeah, I believe you asked me about Kawhi and what he does and how the Suns defend that. How do you feel about this? For me personally, I think Kawhi is just so much easier for someone to, you know, he's an incredible superstar, but I think he's so much easier for someone to guard, for a team like Phoenix to guard, because he's not going to beat you north to south.
Yeah.
Like Okogie and Craig, can they stop Kawhi Leonard? No, he's going to draw fouls. He's, and that's the big thing. That's how the Clippers win the series, or at least make it close, is like, he's got to average his same free throw rate that he did in that 2019-20, that bubble playoff run where he was getting to the line like 13, 14 times, man. It was ridiculous. But he's going to overpower those guys, but I think you match up like that. You don't put like KD or one of your stars on him, because honestly, he doesn't require that much energy, speed wise.
Interesting. Interesting that you bring that up, that you wouldn't put a guy like KD who's got the length against him. And you know what? It's interesting because I am very curious what the Clippers do in this series when it comes to their offense. And I talked about it very briefly on the last podcast. And the one thing that's concerned me this year, Shane, is that whenever Kawhi or PG is out of the lineup and it's just the one guy on the floor and a team really wants to stop you, the double teams that they throw at the one star player really throws off the Clippers offense and puts a lot of pressure on the role players to make shots. And I think there's going to be a very big emphasis on guys like Eric Gordon and Nick Batum hitting their shots early. Because if the Clippers struggle like they have in the last couple of games, and especially those two who did not shoot well over the weekend, then the Clippers have an ability now to fall behind by a lot early on, because the Suns can get hot, Kawhi can get bottled up by a couple of players that will get thrown at him. And then there's obviously Zoo, like you mentioned, but Westbrook, who knows? I mean, Westbrook's going to be a wild card in this one, but that's my big concern. Do you think that makes sense that the Clippers could be in some big trouble offensively if Phoenix really just commits everybody at Kawhi Leonard?
Absolutely. And it's something that I've kind of been thinking about. Like, I think even Justin Wilson was saying, like, the Clippers offense is way more of a battle. Like, it's way more of a point of contention for the series. Like, if the Clippers offense is what we've seen in other playoff games, where, you know, they get hot, they swing the ball around, you know, drive, kick, swing and create open threes, then yeah, like, they're going to be able to compete with Phoenix. But I don't really worry about the Clippers defensively as much, because they're physical. They're long. They have so many wings that can kind of rotate in and out and get feisty with the Suns team, who, as you said, is not very fast. They play a slower half court style. It's more so, like you said, does Monty Williams throw traps at Kawhi? Mm-hmm. You don't have Paul George on the second side. You don't have PG waiting for that trap to happen, whether it's spotting up and hoping, you know, Russ can kind of push the pressure and then kick out for open threes to PG and so on and so forth, or it's PG as the guy that's roaming down the lane whenever there's a trap going on. So I think we've seen Zoo do a really good job of handling those situations where if Kawhi draws two to the ball, he's going to find his shooters or just go and dunk it on somebody. My issue is I don't know if the Suns are a team that sends a lot of traps. In the games I've watched, they're more conservative. Hmm. They don't like doing that. And if they did that, I think it would be against someone like Luka if they met him again, because Luka is just an absolute nightmare. You know that from the first two series they've played against the Clippers. Like, that guy can pick apart any coverage. I don't know if they would do it against Kawhi. They would probably want to force Kawhi to beat them one-on-one.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. I'll be curious to see if they do guard him one-on-one initially, yeah, and if they do adjust.
To your point, I think Norm Powell, this Clippers team is way more equipped, incredibly more equipped to beat those scenarios.
Yeah.
Because in 2021, who did you have to create plays in 4-on-3s on the backside on offense, except for, you know, Reggie, Rondo, like, that was it, right? I mean, Terrence. I mean, now you got Norm, who's just way better than those guys. Terrence is still there. Russ has been doing this for 15 years now. Like, you know, he's seen KD up close and personal get trapped in Oklahoma City, and he's had to make plays out of that. So this team, hey, if the Suns trap, I think the Clippers are going to score a lot of points per possession, and I would not. I think that's how they extend the series. I just don't see the Suns doing that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And I think three-point shooting is going to be very pivotal in this series. And it's silly to say that because, of course, I mean, threes are more than twos. But I think the Clippers are going to have to spread the ball around, and they're going to have to get in the paint and kick and make that extra pass. And guys like Batum and Gordon and Powell are going to have to do well from three. And if the Clippers don't shoot well from three, they'll struggle. I mean, you look at the games over the weekend when they were missing their shots from distance, it was a close game. When they started making them, All of a sudden they pulled away. And so the three ball is going to be pivotal in this series for the Clippers. And they've certainly got guys that they can bring in and that can make threes. You can even add guys like Bones Highland. So to me, I think the three ball is the most important thing for the Clippers on offense. Would you agree, or do you think it's something else?
On offense, absolutely. Like, if you don't get up, you need to get up 43s a game. I think if there's a game, now maybe it's just because of the pace or the tempo, maybe, you know, the game's slower in the playoffs, but honestly, like, just to be concrete about it, like, I'll probably tweet this out in a preview if I do it, but, like, if they're below 43-point attempts in any of these games, like, you're losing. It's a failure, in my opinion. Like, and they even know that. Like, Ty has said that so many times post-game. Like, we know we're at our best when we're hitting the paint with 2 feet, kicking out, spraying out for threes. Okay, if you know that internally, then you should be getting up those kind of threes all the time. Not, you know, it's cute whenever they shoot 55% from three on, you know, 28 attempts. But it would be even deadlier if you shot like 45% on 45 attempts, you know. So I kind of feel like I kind of feel like they need to get the volume up, and I think they will. It's just a matter of, is Russ going to continue hitting at the clip? Do you trust that? I mean, personally, I don't.
No.
I think regression is coming hard. But then again, to counteract that is Norm, who has been looking awesome. Like, I can't say enough good things about Norm lately.
Yeah, well, Norm was unbelievable this weekend. The reason why the Clippers are where they are right now is because of Norm. He was absolutely tremendous, and he got to the hoop, and more importantly, he drew a lot of fouls, and he was able to get to the line and get those easy buckets that the Clippers struggled to get. I mean, they needed to get those easy points, and he was able to attack and get those points that the Clippers needed. So we'll see what he's able to do in this series, but he's certainly going to be pivotal. Obviously, you did mention earlier 2021. This is a rematch of the Western Conference Finals. The Clippers lost that in six. I believe I said in the last podcast that went five, but the Clippers did lose in six. They won game five. PG carried that team in that series, obviously, but he's out now because there is no Kawhi. It's also important to note that there was no Zoo either, I believe, in game six because he got hurt. So the Clippers, it's useless, by the way, first of all, to look at that series because these are two completely different teams. And it's useless to look at what happened between these two teams this season because when you add Kevin Durant into the mix, it just changes things so much. And you had Chris Paul, who was hurt. You had Booker, who's been hurt during the season. But now everybody's healthy, and that's the one thing you could ask for is health. And Phoenix certainly has it on their side now. We mentioned KD versus Kawhi. You briefly touched on Ayton versus Zoo. So let's talk about that one because Zoo has been very good of late and frankly this whole season. I mean, you and I have talked about it that if you take away PG and Kawhi, then there are times where you could say Zoo is probably the third most important Clipper. And there was a game where he played 33 minutes, I believe it was, against the Lakers, and the Clippers did very well. I mean, he needs to get up to that 30-plus minutes in the postseason, especially if Ayton's going to be on the floor because Plumlee's not good enough to defend Ayton one-on-one, and you're going to need Zoo on the floor. How do you see that matchup stacking up? Because I think that one actually does favor Zoo in that he is a very good one-on-one defender, and he has shown that he has developed into a very solid offensive player as well, especially if you look at the pick and roll with him and Kawhi, and also if you look at what Russ has meant to him in terms of finding him in good spaces, delivering him good passes. I think that matchup does favor the Clippers slightly. How do you see that one shaking out?
So Ayton's had a weird up and down year. I mean, there's times that he looks, you know, 5 or 10 times better than last year. And there's times that you're like, man, is he even on the floor? Like you would swear that Phoenix is playing small because he's not really a part of it. I feel like the Durant presence is lighting a fire under him to the point where I feel like they needed someone to come in. I know Chris has been there for about 3 years or 3 or 4 years now, whatever it is, 3 years. And I feel like, you know, he's been the strong voice that's kind of got into DA. But I think they needed someone else to come in and say, hey, you could be even better than what you have been. Like, you know, they're not really feeding you the ball enough. And I think Durant has done a good job of hitting him on rolls, making sure he's open. You know, Phoenix runs their double drag with Devin Booker coming off two screens, and it's either Ayton rolling and KD popping, or KD's in the weak side corner. I think both of them play so well off of each other, and it's going to be a handful for Zoo to handle. Just a lot of responsibility, a lot of space to cover whenever the Phoenix spreads you out that way with KD in the corner. But I think Zoo has – I'm kind of with you. I think Zoo has a little bit of advantage in the fact that as long as he doesn't get into foul trouble, right? Because I could see scenarios where DA, like, is down there and he's so physical and he is drawing two fouls on Zoo in the first few – you know, first 4 or so minutes. And it kind of, like – then you're – then Ty's automatically forced with the decision of, like, do I play Plumlee or do I go small? Like, what do I do? Then you kind of get wonky with the lineup. So I think as long as Zoo just stays his ground and doesn't get overly physical to where he's fouling a lot. And he, by the way, Zoo complains every call now.
Well, he does get hacked. He doesn't get a great whistle.
He complains after every single call.
He doesn't get a great whistle, Shane. I mean, he really has. He's gotten hacked several times in the last couple of weeks and nothing's been called. He does not get treated like a superstar center. Which, yeah. I mean, he's obviously not a superstar center, but at the same time, mm-hmm. he gets none of those 50-50 calls. There are times where he's absolutely destroyed. He doesn't get the call. So I understand part of that. And now he's just getting frustrated when that stuff happens.
Oh, yeah. I'm more so like that. That is true. I'm more so thought of like when I'm thinking about that, it's on the defensive end whenever he thinks he goes straight up. But does go kind of perpendicular with his arms. It's like,
well, no one's committed a foul. Like, no one's ever committed a foul in their lives.
Yeah. Now, on the other side of that coin, though, like imagine if Zoo is down there being a beast that we know he can be, but he doesn't always show it. And he draws two quick fouls on Ayton mm-hmm. or gets Ayton in foul trouble in the third quarter. Then Monty has to play Jock Landale. And who knows about Bismack Biyombo's situation? That looked rough the second to last game of the season when he got hurt against the Lakers, I believe. So I don't know if he'll be back, but he's a small center anyway. But, you know, then it's like, oh, my God, we haven't seen the Suns, like, ever in this Monty Williams era, and I mean ever, go small in the playoffs. I mean, they've always had a backup big. Like, imagine KD at the five. So I don't even know, man, but I do think like they'll start obviously like Zoo and Ayton on each other. I don't think they'll get weird with the matchup, but I am looking for, I thought about this. Tell me what you think about this. Like Kawhi is physical. You can't move him in the post. And I think he's disciplined to not draw fouls. He's really in foul trouble. Like what do you think about putting him on Ayton on some possessions, maybe even to start, and having Zoo on that corner guy that's if you want to help off and dare him to shoot. I mean, that's just one way to muck up the spacing of Phoenix, is to put Zoo on the non-shooter and have Kawhi on Ayton. I think we saw a little bit of that in some of the matchups.
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. And I think it really depends who that guy is, right? I mean,
yeah,
you look at what Phoenix has been able to roll out, and they've got a couple of different guys they can put in that position. And they haven't really been able to play many of their normal starters. But you look at Okogie, you look at Craig, and even Terrence Ross. But you go with the guy who can hit shots. And Okogie's a guy that doesn't really hit a ton of them. He's not a great shooter. I mean, you look at mm-hmm. for the season, he's shooting 39%, shooting 33.5% from three. Whereas Torrey Craig this season is shooting 45.5% and close to 40% from three. So I think it really depends who's starting in that spot and who's playing in that spot, because you can't really hide Zoo against a good three-point shooter. But if someone's going to struggle from deep, I mean, you just look at what Gobert obviously did, then it certainly changes things, and it helps the Clippers out. But I think you make a really good point with the small ball.
That's so fascinating.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, about the small ball. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Because finish what you're going to say, and then I'll bring up the small ball.
It's so fascinating that Phoenix has this decision of Craig, the better shooter on paper, mm-hmm. but Okogie's been red hot since, I think, you know, maybe like February 15th or something like that. I think he's shooting maybe 38-39%. Don't quote me from three, but I think it's around there. Or do you go, you know, stick with Okogie, who is the way better offensive rebounder and has been creating so many extra possessions for the Suns? And I think that's where the Clippers lose this series. If you allow, it's kind of like the 17-18 Warriors, which I hate to compare this team to that because this Suns team is not that. But if you give them extra possessions, you're done. Like, you're just done. You need to win the possession battle. And Okogie is, I think he has one of the highest offensive rebounding rates of any guard we've seen, or any wing guard we've seen. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so to touch on what you're saying with the small ball, you think about that. And that's my biggest fear with the Clippers, is that they go to the small ball too often because they have a guy like Zoo. But if Zoo's in foul trouble, then it makes a lot more sense to go to the small ball. But the small ball, if you get an Ayton in foul trouble, certainly scares the crap out of you more on the Suns side than it does the Clippers side. I mean, the Clippers, they go ahead and they roll out Batum or Covington in there, and even Marcus Morris, if he happens to come back for the series and he's used, well, like you said, the Suns can go KD at the five, and then that really scares you because you don't know what else they could do. If they can bring in a guy like Terrence Ross, for example, who could really get hot in a series. So it mm-hmm. scares me if the Suns go small, more so than the Clippers going small. So foul trouble, I think, will be a really interesting thing to watch when it comes to this Ayton versus Zoo matchup. So I'm glad you brought that up, because you know those two guys are very physical, and the Clippers are physical as a team. So foul trouble will certainly be interesting to watch with those two. So good point there.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes down to Phoenix, I feel like a lot of people, you know, I get like you have to be confident in your team if you're a Clippers fan, or you know, you cover the Clippers, like you think this could be a awesome back and forth series. Like I do too. I think I know what I'm gonna pick, but like I kind of feel like a lot of the Clippers people are underestimating, or I think they're looking at the 8-game sample of like who they played. Which was not, let's be honest, it was not good competition. The Suns played with Durant, but a couple of good games in there. You know, I think Dallas was still, the fact that they outshot Dallas like that in Dallas on the road, on a national TV game, like it, that was meaningful to me. The fact that they could get that hot and beat a team that was just matching their intensity on offense. But I think, you know, with Durant, they have played 550 possessions, and they are plus 11.6 per 100. That's awesome. 98th percentile in the league. Like, I kind of feel like people should think about how they're getting open and how they're getting shots versus who they've played. Because I would argue the same shots that they got against, you know, whether it's San Antonio or the skeleton Nuggets or Charlotte, pick your the Bulls, pick your opponent that you thought was weak. I think those same shots are going to be there against the Clippers.
Yeah, the Clippers defense has just been awful all year. That's certainly one thing that really concerns me. So it kind of leads into the next matchup that I really want to break down. And it's a guy that I know you love, and that's Chris Paul. And he has shot the ball terribly this year, with a caveat that he has been much better in the last couple of weeks. He has shot the ball very well from three. I don't know where all of a sudden he has found his stroke, but it's there now. And he's a guy that can be a menace in a playoff series because of how he's able to operate an offense. And we've seen that firsthand with the Clippers. So you look at the Westbrook versus Paul matchup, and I'm curious how you think Westbrook will do defensively against Chris Paul, because Paul's a guy that can bait the hell out of guys and get switches onto whoever he wants, which is certainly a concern. So I'm curious, when you look at the defensive side, because that's going to be pivotal. That's part of the reason why they got Westbrook, is because of his ability to be a good defender and also a good rebounder on the defensive glass as well. How do you think Westbrook will do against Chris Paul on the defensive side?
So I think he's going to do, I think Russ is going to have the advantage on that side of the floor, because Chris is not blowing by him. He's not even getting an advantage. He's not getting a foot advantage on him. Like, Russ is still way faster than, obviously, 38-year-old Chris Paul, way faster. But I think where people get lost and they think about, oh, like, Russ is better than Chris at this point. Like, he's way more athletic. He's going to win that matchup. Therefore, the Clippers have that in the bag, like, in terms of that matchup. Like, what I would say is, I really, really fear that Russ is going to struggle in terms of like the screen navigation. Mm-hmm. Phoenix sets a lot of good hard screens up top. Like, Chris is not going to have to go by Russ. He's going to bury Russ on a screen, because there's no one better in history, in my opinion, of manipulating your guy into that screen. He's going to make sure Russ gets hit by Ayton or KD, whoever it is. And I think we are going to see the theatrics, the rip throughs, the baiting fouls. Like I think we're going to see some chippiness, you know, maybe later on in the series, you know, like the Pat Bev stuff didn't really flare up until the end of that series in 2021. But I think we are going to see some of that aggression and tenacity to come out, and tempers might flare. But on the other end, that's more fascinating to me, is can the Clippers take advantage of Chris Paul every possession? And what does that look like? Does it look like picking on him every time to slow down?
How has he been defensively this season? Because I haven't watched that many Suns games. How has he been defensively? Sorry to cut you off.
You're good.
How has he been? Because I haven't seen a ton of Suns games this year. How has Chris looked on the defensive side?
I would say if last year, and this is my opinion, I think if last year was like an 8 out of 10, I think this year's like a 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. I think he's been a little bit worse because of the age, because he doesn't really want to turn it up until the fourth quarter. But the instincts are always, to me, as someone that loves watching defense, like I think the instincts and knowing where to be and what to do and where to rotate, that's always going to make up for the speed to me. And it ain't like he's out there like a snail. Like, he can still get around. So it's more so, do you want to slow down your offense? Do you want to call his man up? Do you want to, do you want Kawhi and Russ to run, you know, 25 ball screens in this game to pick on CP? And is Kawhi just going to settle for mid-range jumpers over him, which, yeah, he could hit, but that's like a 44% shot, right? So then it kind of, you see what I'm saying? Like, it's really fascinating. Do the Clippers do that, or do they try to just run their normal stuff and create threes that way? Because as you and I both just said, like, they need to win the math battle. I don't think you do that picking on Chris Paul. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I just worry that the Clippers just, it, on that side of the ball, when they have the ball offensively with Westbrook, if you try and pick on Chris Paul, and let's say that you are able to get a switch, then I see the ball going back to Russ a lot. I mean, let's say that they get the switch, yeah, he passes it off, and then you get him back, you give him the ball back in three-point territory, and then he has to attack the hoop. And so I think the only reason, or the only way that you can really take advantage of that Chris Paul matchup is if Russell Westbrook is aggressive going to the basket. Because if he's going to sit there and he's going to shoot the ball from 12 feet out, then you're helping Chris Paul and you're helping the Phoenix Suns defense. Whereas if you're able to attack the hoop, not only are you hurting Chris Paul because he'll try and get back and he'll reach in to try and get a steal and draw and get a foul, but you're also attacking Ayton at the same time because he's in the paint area.
Yeah.
And that opens more looks for Zoo, because the more you attack the hoop, the more you're able to shovel it off to Zoo or get Ayton to come for a double team. If Chris Paul is right there and he gets slightly beaten, then that opens up looks for Zoo. And that also can open up a look for somebody in the corner for a three-point shot. So I think the only way that you can really take advantage of that matchup is if Westbrook is the facilitator, finding either Zoo or finding someone in the open corner. Mm-hmm. That's how I see.
That's how I am too. Like if you want to hunt Chris just so you can get an advantage, and then you create shots from there, as you say, like Russ as the facilitator downhill after you created the advantage on Chris Paul, like that'll work. I hope for the Clippers' sake they don't grind this game down and try to go possession for possession. You know, I think they have to really win the math, and the rebounding has to be like not a big difference. I think Phoenix is going to win the rebounding margin just because they have incredible offensive rebounders. It's unreal. Like, their numbers this year are absurd. Clippers don't, to my knowledge, I don't think the Clippers really go after them as much. Like, I don't think they get as much. But also, like, we talk about battlegrounds for the series, like turnovers. You're talking about Chris Paul, career turnover rate at, like, you know, what, 11-12%? Versus what, Russell Westbrook, like 18-19%, like that could decide the series too.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because we talked about the 43s that the Clippers need to get up. And if you commit the turnovers on the offensive end, that's one less shot that you can get up every single time you commit turnovers. And that's certainly a focus for the Clippers. We mentioned the three ball. I think the second thing is turnovers, because that was when they were really in a rut during the middle of the season, is when they're turning it over a bunch. And that was a problem. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that every time you turn over the basketball, it's one less shot that you're getting up on the offensive end. And against a team like Phoenix, you need to get as many shots up as possible, because they're going to get their shots up and they're going to make a lot of them, especially when they've got guys like KD, like Chris Paul, like Ayton, and then lastly, like Devin Booker. And that leads me into the last guy for Phoenix I want to talk about. And it's not really a matchup on the Clippers end versus the Suns end, but I just want to talk about Booker in general, because it feels like when you talk about the matchups, we talked about Kawhi versus KD, we talked about Russ versus CP, we talked about Ayton versus Zoo, it's Booker versus question mark. I mean, Eric Gordon's now in the starting lineup. It would be Booker versus PG, but that's not the case now. So I feel like that is going to be a massive advantage for Phoenix, is that Booker kind of feels like the forgotten man. And you talked about how difficult it was for you to leave him off, I believe, of your three. You left him off, right, on the All-NBA teams?
I left him off. I think he lost the tiebreaker in terms of games played. I think he lost the tiebreaker to De'Aaron Fox for me, personally.
Yeah, and Fox was incredible. I mean, you could put him as your number five vote for MVP, and I'd have no problem with it. He's going to win the Clutch Player of the Year award. He's just been tremendous there. And that tells you how good Booker has been, that he's being in the same conversation as De'Aaron Fox, who helped the Sacramento Kings to a three seed. But Booker kind of feels like the forgotten man, right? That, like, he can go and score 40 in a game. Like, that is very possible. And I'm just not sure how the Clippers stop him. I feel like that's going to be one of the biggest problems, Shane.
Oh, absolutely right. And I don't even think, like, hot take, I don't think it's even going to be with him on the ball per se. I could see scenarios where KD draws two. It's, you know, Ty throwing traps, because we know Ty loves to do that. He tries to trap Dame Lillard at half court every time. He tries to trap Luka to get the ball out of his hands whenever, you know, whenever it's go time in the fourth quarter. I think if KD is cooking, like, and you have Booker on the weak side wing or weak side corner, like, and you trap KD, like, you're just asking for danger, because you have Devin Booker, who is going to either be catching and shooting against a scramble defense or attacking those closeouts. And you're right, the forgotten man, and I think he's okay with that in this series, because he knows, like, let's be honest, if the Suns win the series, to me, I think this is a tougher matchup. Maybe I'm wrong. I think Clippers are a tougher matchup than Denver for that team, because, like, I see Devin Booker creating all kinds of mid-range havoc against Denver if they get there. I don't think he can do that. I don't think he's going to do that against the Clippers. I think Clippers have done a really good job of kind of shutting off the water of CP and Booker in the mid-range pull-ups. They've done a fairly good job of that. Where it's going to be really, really tough is, like, okay, you have to send a little help to Durant at some point if he's killing you. And guess what? It's going to open up the floodgates elsewhere. I think Booker's going to have a highly efficient series. Maybe not. I think the volume won't be what we're looking at. Remember, he and PG in game one went for like 40 apiece back and forth down the fourth quarter. That would have been so fun to see. You're right. If PG was in this series, like, that would be the matchup. And that neither of those two like each other. So that would be even more fun. But we don't have it.
Yeah, and I don't expect to see PG this series. I mean, Shams had a non-update, really, to start the week.
That's like the third non-update we've had.
Yeah, I just don't need it. The Clippers are a team that is not going to tell you anything about their star players more often than not. If they're not telling you anything, it means that the guy's going to be out for a while. I mean, we saw with Kawhi that he was really week to week, and all of a sudden, he had a torn ACL. So, I mean, the injury for PG could be tougher than we think, or could be more serious than we think, and he's just trying to come back from it for the playoff series. So who knows? We're not counting on him. Lastly, I want to talk about depth, because you've talked about this a lot on Twitter in the last couple of days, and you've that depth isn't a huge thing, and I agree with you, because I've said on this podcast numerous times when people have said how the guys that are 9, 10, 11 on the Clippers, that they need to get playing time. Guys like Luke Kennard when he was on the team, for example. Reggie Jackson, like, how are you going to play all these guys? And I said, it doesn't matter. Because come playoff time, I really want to look at the top 8 guys. And that's what matters to me, is the guys you're going to play off your bench. And for the Suns, we mentioned already Craig and Okogie, and so that gets you to 6. And then you have Campaign, who was a thorn in the Clippers' side, by the way, in that playoff series a couple of years ago. Like, I remember Payne having some moments in that series. He is certainly a guy that can cause problems. And then you've got their backup center. I mean, Jock Landale.
It's Jock Landale.
Yeah, there you go. Jock Landale looked like a guy who was the center of the year in some moments against the Clippers. So here's the thing, is that the Clippers have guys that can make an impact off the bench. And I think that's going to be the difference between the Clippers and the Suns, is that the Clippers have more impact guys off the bench. They have guys that they could throw at you for 30 minutes off the bench, whereas the Suns are going to rely more on their starters. The Clippers can go ahead and throw Norm Powell in there for 30 minutes. They can go ahead and they could throw Bones Highland in there for 25 minutes if he's having a good game. That is one thing the Clippers have. They have guys who can change a ball game off their bench, whereas the Suns don't really have that as much. I mentioned Terrence Ross as well. The rotations are going to be cut. I want to get your opinion on the Clippers side, because I don't think we need to touch on the Suns much on their bench side, because they're really going to be reliant on their 4 star players. For the Clippers, a lot of talk about Bones Highland. How much do you see him playing in a series like this? Because what I've said all along is that we may see games where he may not even play. He may play 5 minutes. Yeah. He may not have much of an impact. But if the Clippers need energy, they need juice, and the starters aren't giving it to them, then all of a sudden you could see Bones Highland. You may see Bones Highland in an adjustment as the starter. If the Clippers go down 2-0 and Westbrook isn't giving the Clippers enough as a starter, you could see Bones Highland, for example, enter the starting lineup. I could see that type of adjustment. where do you think he's going to make an impact in this series? Because he's a really tough guy to figure out on my end.
Oh, yeah. Like, strictly minutes-wise, not style or anything, but strictly minutes-wise, I think he's this year's version of that Rondo or Kennard role, where, remember, Kennard didn't even play for that most of the map series, right? Then he's automatically effective in, what, a game six or seven? Maybe both. Like, and obviously, like, Rondo didn't even have, like Ty was one of his best friends, and Ty just sat him for multiple big stretches of that playoff run. And I think that, like, that's, you know, Bones. Like, Bones is going to – there's only going to be certain situations. And I see him coming in, and if the Clippers are, like, you know, struggling for energy, they're down double digits at the half, like, they're not getting to the foul line, they need some juice. Like, I can see them going to Bones and saying, hey, like, either get to the rim or – you know, you have a step back game. You have your pull up game that's been pretty efficient with the Clippers, at least I think. Decently efficient. He's shooting about 35% from three. It feels a little bit higher than that. It's crazy.
Well, he's had a couple of really bad games, and then he had a couple of good games.
Yeah, I could see him being that guy, and I think that I think he'd be better than obviously Campaign, because it seems like Bones just gets where he wants to go. Campaign, like, he doesn't really get to the rim, and he settles for floaters or long jumpers too often. So I like that aspect of it, but I'm kind of just riding the wave that he's not going to play that much. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe game one, game two, Bones is getting 20 minutes, 25 something. I don't know, man, but like, I think the Clippers have to just trust their top six. It's something I've always said, or it's something I love from Pat Riley's quote, like, where he's like, you know, in the playoffs, you use eight, rotate seven, play six, trust five. Like, you slim down the rotation for a reason, because there's a certain amount of people you can trust. And I don't think that I would trust Bones in this type of series where you have to be efficient every step of the way. But if they need the juice, then he's the best option for it.
Okay, so you mentioned top six, and that number six guy would be Norm Powell. And I purposely left off someone when I was describing the Clippers a couple of minutes ago, and that's Terrence Mann. And he has certainly been a guy that has provided juice and athleticism, and you and I have been on the same page about him for a long time, and we thought that he should have stayed as the starting point guard instead of the Clippers acquiring Westbrook. So where's his role in this series? Because it really feels like he can be a guy that can be thrown on Kevin Durant and cause him some problems, or even get thrown on a guy like Devin Booker, for example. So it's tough to balance, because you and I have already mentioned how, hey, Plumlee's going to relieve Zoo. You talked about Powell. We've talked about Highland. Mm-hmm. We've talked about now Terrence Mann. So how does he fit in this series? Because you can really only play eight or nine guys, and you can only really play probably three or four guys that 30 plus minutes. And so where does Team Man fit?
Yeah, I have to amend that. When, you know, top six, obviously it's seven with Terrence. I got to amend that. But, and honestly, like we all know my stance on this, the top six for the Clippers, in my opinion, would not include Russell Westbrook. It would include Terrence Mann and Norm Powell. Like that Terrence would be the starter in my ideal world, but we don't live in that world. So, I think Terrence is going to be the second most or third most important Clipper, you know, in my opinion, because he has to kind of replicate the PG stuff. You can't even say that, man, because the PG's production is just so ungodly. But I think on defense has to replicate that, right? And that's something that I didn't really think about when we were talking about Booker. Maybe it's Terrence. Like, maybe Terrence has to be the guy that's guarding him. Maybe he has to start. I don't know, man. Like, I think both of us would trust Terrence on Devin Booker more than Eric Gordon, right?
Yeah, but I also don't want Eric Gordon and Norm Powell coming off the bench together, because all of a sudden you're going to get crushed defensively.
So I think what we're getting to is it's a really tough decision by both coaches, but more so Ty on how he mixes and matches. Because, like I said, I think Terrence should start from day one, but he's not. So that's Eric now starting, and now Russ – I think Rush should be starting, but it is what it is. It is what it is. I think Terrence is going to be vitally important. If they win the series, it's because Terrence is matching Josh Okogie in terms of wide open shot making. Josh Okogie is going to get five threes a game. It's what he's going to get. I don't know if he's going to make them, but he's going to get those at least five, maybe more. Like, Terrence has to hit the open shots that he gets from all the attention Kawhi gets, and he has to be the offensive rebounding guy. Like, he has to match that same type of role.
By the way, it could be Man that starts in a series changer. Like, let's say the Clippers go down 2-0. All of a sudden, Man could be the one that replaces Westbrook in the starting lineup, or he replaces Eric Gordon in the starting lineup. That's one thing the Clippers have the ability to do with all these guys that are really interchangeable, in that they provide something different, but they can also be thrown off the bench or in the starting lineup, is that Ty Lue can make adjustments, and he's shown that he'll make adjustments in a series. And listen, this has not been a good coaching year for Ty Lue. I thought he's made a lot of mistakes throughout the season, but he's also been dealing with a lot of crap off the court as well. Whether it's with the front office or he's dealing with stuff with his family and deaths in his family, like, it's been a really rough year for him. So it can't go too hard into him, but he's a guy that has shown in the playoffs that he can step up and he can make those adjustments. And he and Rick Carlisle were going mano a mano in some of those series, whether it was Carlisle throwing in Boban or the Clippers then going and benching Rondo or starting Rondo. Like, we saw a lot of fun back and forth. And Monty Williams is a hell of a coach too. So it'll be interesting on the coaching side for sure, Shane.
Yeah. I think Ty is going to have a good series from the standpoint of making the right decisions and pushing the right buttons whenever they're down. But essentially, I just think they're going to lose the points per possession battle. Like, they're just going to lose on the margins of, or not even on the margins. They're going to lose on talent, not having PG. I think the fans are going to try to, I don't know. I don't know if they'll try to blame Ty or not, but I think he's going to coach a good series. He's always coached good in the playoffs, coached well in the playoffs. So yeah. I think that's not going to change. It's just, he's going to have that built-in excuse of, hey man, like, my all NBA or all defensive wing that is 6'9" and can cloud Devin Booker's vision on some of these shots is not here.
I just think the talent's going to be overwhelming on the Sun side. So let's get into it. Let's get into the prediction. Let's close out the podcast with the prediction. I'll give mine first. Obviously I've been super negative this year in terms of the Clippers, and I just don't see them flipping that switch. I just don't think that this team has been good enough this year in a consistent amount of games to show us they can do it in a playoff series. They're way too up and down, and I haven't really seen them put together 2 to 3 straight games against good teams that have actually had healthy lineups. And so because of that, I'm taking the Suns in 5. What's your prediction?
So I was sitting here, like, I've been flirting with Suns in 5 for a while, but after I dig into it and see how great Kawhi is in the playoffs, it won't allow me to do it. Like, I got to give him a couple games, and when I came on this podcast, I didn't expect me to go 6 and you 5. You're probably going to end up being right because the talent is going to be overwhelming, but I think the two wins the Clippers get, in my opinion, are going to be like close wins where you don't really feel good about it at all. And I think Phoenix bounces back every time after a loss, and they're going to smash them in the mouth. And I see this culminating with like a big game 6, win for Phoenix regardless. So I'm gonna go game 6, Suns in 6. But I will ask you this, like, it's actually hilarious how it kind of worked out this way, because let's just say in some world that the Clippers did win this series in like 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. Then you get the team that you have not beaten in 2 or 3 years in Denver.
Yeah.
Like you beat the ultra, ultra talented Suns, who in theory should be like, the 1 or 2 seed. And now you have to play Denver. Like, horrible road for the Clippers.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful. And that's why there's been so much talk about how the Clippers shouldn't have done what they did. And they should have gone ahead and lost and taken their chances, maybe even in the play-in. But you know what? The Clippers got to a point where they just decided, you know what? Let's get in the playoffs and let's figure it out afterwards. And I don't blame them at all. And so I give credit to the Clippers for that. So we'll see how it shakes out. But it is, listen, Shane said Suns in 6, and Devin Booker said that Shane knows ball. And so if Shane truly knows ball, then we'll see if that prediction does come true. He does an incredible job for Forbes. Shane Young at Young NBA on Twitter. Always great having him on the pod. Shane, anything else you want to hit on?
I think we covered all of it. I mean, until we get the film. I mean, man, yeah. Once we get some film to react to, then yeah, we'll do some more pods for sure. Because we got 2 weeks before the end of the series, it seems like.
So. Yeah, we'll see what happens. And Shane and I were talking right before we started recording that we have no idea in terms of what the series is going to look like. If it's going to be every other day, which I think the NBA wants to do, or if it's going to be perhaps a couple of extra days rest at some point, because we're recording this really during the Lakers game. And if the Lakers do happen to lose this game, which I don't anticipate them doing, then all of a sudden they'll play on Friday. And that would put the Clippers and the Lakers both on Sunday and on the same exact schedule. So their NBA is going to have to do something about it. But I'd anticipate the Lakers, if they win today, then they would probably play, I think, on Saturday. I don't know the exact schedule, if that's the case, where the 2 seed would play the 7 seed. But if that does happen, then it would make things a lot easier. So we'll see how it goes. We'll obviously have podcasts for you, hopefully after every single game. But this is going to be the preview podcast. So no more podcasts until we actually get basketball games. So I hope you enjoyed this one, because I thought this was probably the best podcast we've had all season. We really covered everything from A to Z, like I said. So Shane, it's been a pleasure, man. And I appreciate everything you've done for us this season. And enjoy the playoffs, dude.
Thanks for having me on for a handful of times, man. It's been a blast. And yeah, maybe one of these days we'll run into each other in LA.
Yeah, one of these days we'll figure it out where we can actually meet up in person. But
yeah.
Until then, yeah. We'll have to just keep doing this virtually and enjoying each other's soothing voices. I said to you, I love that Southern drawl, man. You got to keep it. I know you want to get rid of it, because you're going to move to the West Coast eventually. But just keep it, man. It's what makes you. You got to take it and enjoy it.
People are going to like, who's this hick from Kentucky, or who's this hick from Tennessee?
Hey, listen, you provide great insight. So who cares what the sound is? I think it sounds great. So Shane,
I appreciate having me, man.
I love having you on, man, at Young NBA on Twitter. So this is the end of the pod. If you can rate and review, greatly would be appreciated. Give us that 5-star rating. Review the pod as well. At BD Marcus is my Twitter handle. Of course, I mentioned a couple times at Young NBA for Shane. My other co-host, Matt Warren on Twitter as well. It's the Ethos Clippers podcast at Ethos Clips on Twitter. Until next time, or until after game one, he's Shane. I'm Brandon, and go Clips.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.